What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jimmy Dodd. It is my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I just want to say off the top of the show, I want to assure everybody that this the studio is a banana bread free zone today. So we won't have a repeat of the disaster that was yesterday. I apologize to everyone's ears for that. I've taken precautions this time. It's not going to happen.
Oh, all of our problems are solved. I have banana bread.
No, I don't have banana bread. That's my point. I can't be tempted to chew it on air now.
Chewing it on air.
It was bad.
In front of Ian Cole, too. Like,
well, no, the whole thing was I had to finish it before Ian Cole came into the room.
Right.
But then people could hear me finishing it, and so I was responding to the inbox as Ian Cole came into the room, and he was like, what's this about banana bread?
You decided to take shots from your audience as opposed to
Ian Cole. Yeah, my choices were...
I would have made the opposite decision.
My choices were interview Ian Cole with like wads of banana bread in my cheeks and look like a chipmunk, and him being able to like see it in my mouth I talk to him, or try to desperately swallow it on air.
This is where the fact that you're not in the room actually dings you, okay?
Mm.
If you know Ian Cole, okay, you know this. Ian Cole is the only person in my life over the past 12 months who has at any point apologized to me for being long-winded.
Amazing.
Can you imagine?
Now, I will say I didn't know. I knew a player was coming.
You didn't know
it was going to be Ian Cole for sure.
Because if you know it's Cole, like, because there are some players where you're going to have to hold hands. You know what I mean? You're going to have to hold
their hand.
But Ian Cole is a guy, you ask a question, you put your feet up, you let it run.
Yep.
I love having an interview with a player where they answer me in full sentences. Ian Cole answers you in paragraphs.
It's great.
It's the best.
He's awesome.
He rocks. So, okay. Well, if you didn't know it was Cole,
I didn't know it was going to be Ian Cole. So I was like, okay, this is a disaster.
But
there's no good options here.
But literally, I have a transcript somewhere from this season. I don't remember even what the subject was. And Ian Cole's going off and he's like, excuse me for being long-winded. And I laughed so hard. The transcript's just like, ha, 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 ha. Me just being like, man, no one should ever apologize to me for being long-winded.
By the way, is Daniel Campbell text in? Did the Drance man hear the amazing compliment Rick gave him this morning on the Halbro show? Said he was an interviewer's dream because he loves to hear himself talk. He said, you're not Philip Hronek, because unlike Philip Hronek, you don't give one word answers.
Who said this?
Rick Dhaliwal.
Okay. That's good.
All right, let's get into it. Enough.
They also asked me about my process of working with Rick. So the day before, I guess, I was on Halbro talking about Rick's hilarious indexed lists that he sends when we work together. And so I guess it's a back and forth now.
Yeah.
Halbro just has me and Dhaliwal on to beef with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Much like the crossover.
To continue the beef. Okay, enough frivolity here. Let's get into it. Because, you know, we are officially in off-season speculation, transaction, rumor, report mode in a big way here, and
are we gonna do it?
What?
How many pump fakes are you gonna throw me right now to hit this button?
We'll get to it, don't worry. Do you want to start with the rumors and the reports out there? Do you want to start with the ongoing Elias Pettersson discourse? I mean, we touched on it a little bit yesterday, but where do you want to start today, Drancer?
I mean, we can start with Elias Pettersson. I don't know, like, what do you think? What's You tell me, man. You're driving.
Okay.
You start with this. Bring me.
I don't know how
bring
much.
Bring me to the big location. Wind me up and point me in the direction you want to talk.
I don't know that we have a ton to add on Elias Pettersson based on, you know, in addition to what we said yesterday. I would say a pretty strong reaction, especially post hearing from Patrick Alvin and Rick Tocchet, has been, from what I'm seeing, that people do not find the knee injury, the tendonitis thing, kind of satisfactory as an explanation. for some reason, it feels like we're it's with Elias Pettersson specifically. It's impossible to talk about him with any degree of nuance, right? It either has to be, oh, he's completely blameless, and oh, what do you expect him to do with Mikheyev? And he had a bad knee. He couldn't have possibly done anything else. Or it has to be, he's a bum. He has no heart, yada, yada, yada. They shouldn't have given him $11.6 million. Now, I don't want to use your least favorite phrase, right, and suggest that multiple things can be true at the same time. But I think there's a difference between, like, a reason for why he was playing poorly and an excuse, right? And I think what we heard yesterday from Elias Pettersson was really important context for why his play dropped off, for why his production dropped off so dramatically. But I also think the flip side of, yeah, but there's other guys in the league with tendonitis, right? There's other guys who are playing through it, and that has to be part of the process for Elias Pettersson going forward, is figuring out how to play through things like that. I think Patrick Helvin captured it best. Right. Where he had a very fair answer, I think, where he basically said, yeah, talent like that doesn't go away. We know Elias Pettersson is talented, but there's also a learning process for him to prepare himself to be playing at his best late into the season and into the playoffs.
Yeah. Which, you know, I think comes back to the one piece of criticism that I've had, which is not criticism so much as just constructive thought on this, is that, you know, I think there's a lot of Canucks players who are banged up that you will never know were banged up. And I think there's high-performing star-level players. I mean, we know about Besser. Besser appears to have broken something on his hand, per Dan Murphy, before he scored his first goal of the playoffs. He finished with 7 goals. So, you know, the one thing I would say about any recrimination of Elias Pettersson in the wake of what we learned is, like, you don't know what anyone else is dealing with in terms of, like, a pain threshold, in terms of how their body's reacting, in terms of what they need to feel comfortable and perform, right? For example, we do a lot in hockey, the, like, and this guy played through it, relative to the pitcher who can't pitch through a blister on his finger, or the NBA player who can't play with a... Well, you know, if you can't lift your hands above your head, you can kind of still, if you're a high enough level player, play a shift in the NHL. If you can't lift your hands above your head, you can't play in the NBA. No chance. You can't defend. If you can't hold a ball the specific way a pitcher needs, like, these are such specialized athletes. And one reason I think players in the NHL are able to play through more than most players. I mean, and by the way, I don't want to question the toughness of NHL players. These are incredible athletes, and their pain thresholds are incredible. But there's more, like, stationary limbs in hockey, to be totally honest with you, right? Like, that's at least part of it. I don't know, and I'm not going to judge, especially as, like, a layman who's usually eating cookies while these guys are playing in the press box. I'm not going to say, like, well, that guy's not tough enough, or, you know, I don't know. Well, here's what I know about knee tendonitis. We have definitely seen it impact athletes to the point of, like, severe outcomes, right? The fact that it's tendonitis does not by itself imply that it's not a big deal. Todd Gurley would be, like, one of the big examples. Additionally, we know that it's a pain threshold injury. So it's one of those that you play through because it can't get worse, but it's extremely painful and can be...
The pain can get worse, but it's not going to create, like, a future risk of an even worse injury for you.
But that doesn't mean that it's not really difficult to perform or feel confident the same way that you would as you're dealing with it and as it's getting progressively worse. So,
and I think that's a key point, right? That the interaction between the injury and then the confidence.
Right.
I think I don't think it takes a genius to look at that potential fact pattern here and say, okay, that's something. The injury started, his performance started to suffer, then his confidence started to drop, and then it became kind of a vicious cycle.
Now, and I do think, because there was the wrist injury, right, in that 2021-2022 campaign where he struggled for half the season, and getting over that wrist injury, and now you've got sort of this. Like, I do sort of wonder if there's a baseline level of effectiveness, some adjustments that Pettersson's going to need to make in his game in order to continue to make a difference in games when he's hurt, right? Like, I wonder if there's, you know, some thought, some work that maybe he should be putting into finding a way to be at a certain level, even if he's not at the highest level that he possibly can be, especially given that this team's hope now is that they're going to play 100 games a year, you know, including playoffs, right? That these seasons aren't going to end in April, but are going to extend into late May and early June. And at some point, you know, you're going to want more of the Pettersson we saw, like, find a way to outbattle Lauzon at the end of game 6 against Nashville than some of the games we saw where he really struggled to make that sort of difference. And then I come back to this, which is just watch the games, man. Like, you could see he didn't have velocity on his shot. You could just see it. Like, that shot off the rush in his A-frame. Like, I know what Pettersson's shot looks like in that moment. Like, I know what the bend in the stick looks like. I know how much velocity he can get on the shots. He didn't have it when he had opportunities to shoot like that. And he was leaving some opportunities to shoot on the table. So, I really struggle with the idea that, like, we should be minimizing this just given what the qualitative evidence tells us, which was that this was a player who meaningfully was impacted in terms of what they were capable of doing. So, look, this is one where it's going to be debated hotly. I don't know. My appetite for it's a little bit limited, I think, relative to the rest of the market. And much like the criticism that Pettersson took while recovering from that wrist injury and rebuilding his confidence in the early part of the Boudreau era, I suspect we'll look back on this and be like, LOL, that was weird. This guy's unbelievable.
All right. I think that's all we can say really on Elias Pettersson right now, although I'm sure it'll come up again at some point here over the next few weeks.
How was that for an Ian Cole?
It was great.
I ended up talking about pitching. That's how you know. That's Perfect. How you know. That's how you know we're cooking. Okay, so what's the
other
the
big
news?
Thing we got to talk about? And Austin and Langley, regular listener, tweeted at us in response to our show tweet, gutted it's not called Natchez Talk for today. And yes, we do have to talk about Martin Natchez from the Carolina Hurricanes. And actually, a couple of reports, both from Elliot Friedman, connecting the Canucks to young forwards from Carolina. But let's start with Martin Natchez. He mentioned it on 32 Thoughts, then went into a little bit about it on the Jeff Merrick Show as well today. Here's Elliot Friedman on Marty Natchez and the Vancouver Canucks on the Jeff Merrick Show.
And the Natchez one is a big one. And, you know, I got a call this morning. I think there's something to this. And I'm sure they're not the only one, but I think there's something to Vancouver. I do. I think that I think the Canucks like the player. I don't think they're the only ones. I think Carolina's going to have some options here.
Yeah.
But you know, you heard about Patrick Alvin yesterday talking about what they were looking at, and Natchez, from a pure hockey point of view, forgetting the contract for a second, because Vancouver's got some hoops they have to jump through.
Yes.
I can see that fit. I can, and I do think it's something the Canucks are at least looking at.
So that is Elliot Friedman again, following up on some initial discussion on the 32 Thoughts podcast. That clip was from the Jeff Merrick Show, and I think there's something to Vancouver. Says he got a phone call on it this morning. Now he also stresses, look, they're not going to be the only ones. Obviously, more than just the Canucks are going to like the player. There's some hoops to jump through, but you kind of take a step back and you look at it, and of course, there's been the comments from Natchez's dad, about it's time to maybe move on from Carolina. He's an RFA. He's 25 years old, and then you also have, from Carolina's perspective, the factor that they have a bunch of right shot defensemen who are out of contract, who are pending UFAs, right? Obviously, Brett Pesce is number one, but also Jalen Chatfield, who's turned into a really good defenseman for them. Anthony DeAngelo, right? Brady Shea on the left side. So you start to kind of connect the dots, and the Canucks have a pending restricted free agent in Filip Hronek. We've heard they're not particularly close on contract talks, maybe haven't even really started contract talks yet. The Hurricanes have a pending restricted free agent in Martin Natchez, who it seems unlikely that they're going to retain. Pretty easy to start connecting the dots between these teams. And then, of course, there's the factor that it was reported they engaged in discussions on Elias Pettersson before Pettersson signed his deal. So there's obviously been a level of communication, and they would have had discussions about players both sides.
I believe that there was a formal offer made. Mm-hmm. I don't think those were just like nascent fun for funsies discussions. I think those got relatively advanced. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting fit. You know, Brady Shea's the one that sort of looms largest in my imagination here because of the fact that there's at least some overlap in skill set, I think, between Shea and Hronek, and that, you know, if you watch them and you're the sort of team that really values, like, this guy wins battles down low, this guy makes great decisions with the puck 100% of the time, you might come away from watching Shea or Hronek and be like, eh, not sure that guy's for me, not my type of flavor. But if you're looking for a guy who, in terms of overall impact, helps you win, I think Hronek and Shea both sort of qualify under that kind of rubric. So that's a player that we've seen the Carolina Hurricanes like in the past. The Hurricanes look like a team, especially in the wake of, I don't know if you're following like the Michkov Philadelphia story.
A little bit.
But it looks like Michkov's, they've got a shot at getting him early. And it looks like Michkov's teammate, or at least from the same program, Nikishin, who is the Carolina Hurricanes, like Russian Chris Pronger, the best defenseman outside the NHL, they might be able to get him early too. Rottenberg, the executive at SKA, sort of suggesting that the club's preparing to lose two players. A lot of people in the industry globally are sort of looking at Nikishin and Michkov as potentially players that may shake loose on an atypical timeline as a result. So, you know, if that happens, then the Carolina Hurricanes will want to keep a top four spot open for this point per game 6'5" mutant who's been captaining the best team in the KHL at the age of 21. But that still means they'd need a righty, right? Like, he's a lefty. You'd still want to find a righty. Natchez, it's obviously getting a little bit complicated. You know, I do think, and my colleague at The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun, reporting at length, that Carolina has wasted no time opening contract talks with Jake Guentzel. I think there's a significant desire to retain him. So, you know, in a world where they retain both Guentzel and Teravainen, and maybe deal Natchez for it. But the problem is Hronek's got such a sick arbitration case that it's hard to lock him up at a deal that makes the Carolina sort of sense that Carolina likes. You know, like,
wouldn't Natchez have a pretty good arb case though as well? Like, I know 53 points this year, but 71 last year.
Of course. Right? But his minutes are a little hit and miss.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, no, I mean, Natchez for sure is going to have, Natchez is going to be expensive on his next deal too, which also sort of brings us to the, you know, that side of the coin, which is that, look, we know the Canucks need to spend up front. We know that they need a top six forward. I like Natchez. He's been a winger most of the last 2 years, but I think he can play center. He's got the size to play center. I actually like him better at center, given sort of how smoothly he moves the puck. Would definitely help this team in transition. And then we know, because he's actually managed to carve out a significant role for Brind'Amour, that he can play Tocket Hockey too, right? Because, Brind'Amour is a more extreme version of Tocket Hockey effectively. So, you know, I love the player. If that's something that the Carolina Hurricanes are considering, I'm sure the Canucks have to take it seriously, but it feels a little, it doesn't feel properly weighted to me, you know?
Just straight up one for one.
I struggle to imagine that you would be able to get Natchez for Hronek straight up without throwing more in.
Although, I hear that, but the premium position aspect of Philip Hronek, right? Especially if teams around the league see Natchez as a winger, which, as you said, is what he's played really for the last couple of seasons. He's been on the wing. So I guess it depends a lot on how you view him as a center versus a winger.
I don't think many teams would view Natchez as anything but more valuable than Hronek.
All right.
Yeah. I you know, it's the size, man. It's like, you just don't find a lot
of 6'2" and really talented.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, all right, that's pretty valuable.
You don't find a lot of 6'2" guys with his puck skills. You know, and I think it's not like Natchez and Rod Brind'Amour's relationship being touch and go on occasion is like a secret in the industry. Right? There's a lot of teams that would look at Natchez as like a guy who's still in his prime and actually hasn't had an opportunity to break out the way he'll have an opportunity to break out here. A lot of, I think, teams would look at him in that regard. I think Natchez himself would look at himself in that regard.
As Friedman says, right? Like, he's going to be in demand. They're going to have options. Other teams are going to be interested for all the reasons we're laying out here.
And so I'm just saying, like, 6'2" forward with a ton of skill who managed to carve out a role, like, whether you think he's a hard player or not, he managed to carve out a role for Brind'Amour. That carries a lot of weight. And you know what I mean? Like, there are guys who literally can't do that.
Mm.
Right? So that's a profile that I think, and that's everyone's flavor in a way that Hronek might not be.
Yeah. I do wonder how much they would be interested in Philip Hronek. And Now, we should mention also Don Waddell resigning, and they named Eric Tulsky the interim GM. Now, of course, with the amount of influence Tulsky already had in that organization, that's not necessarily going to change their priorities or how they do business at all going forward. But, you know, you just look at their depth chart and their cap friendly page, and they have one right shot defenseman under contract for next year. It's Brent Burns at 39 years old, and then he's up. He's done after that, right? So. Now they have Scott Morrow, I should say, who's on an ELC, but you can see the need and you can see the attraction from their standpoint of, okay, hey, this is a 26-year-old. Can we sign him to a long-term deal? We have the cap space and kind of take care of one piece of the puzzle long-term on the right side for us. Again, it really depends on how much they like the player, right? How much they believe in Filip Hronek and the whether or not he would be a fit for Rod Brind'Amour and his system. We should also mention, kind of separately from the Martin Natchez discussion, that Elliot Friedman was also linking Jesperi Kotkaniemi to the Vancouver Canucks. And
By the way, is our inbox filled up yet with people being like, no, Hronek has more value than Natchez?
No.
Okay.
No.
I was wondering, because like, the Hronek valuation conversation is going to be so funny to track all summer, because you're gonna have people being like, he's worthless, he should take whatever the Canucks offer him, and then you're gonna have these like trade speculation moments, and it's like, oh, I think you'd have to add to Hronek to get a player like Natchez, and people will be like, what, he's a one first pair RD, and it's just like, I swear the conversation around him is going to vacillate more wildly than the conversation around Patterson.
No, I think people are just trying to get a handle on like what it would look like. You know what I mean? Like, right. That can be the framework. But then, as you say, what's the actual valuation? What would have to happen on either side to actually make something like that work? Now, as I mentioned, the other name in connection to the Canucks from the Carolina Hurricanes is Jesperi Kotkaniemi. And there's been some buyout speculation on Kotkaniemi. Of course, I think he's under contract until 2030, I believe, at 4.82.
I want to bring this up. Martin Natchez from evolvinghockey.com. So evolvinghockey.com has a contract projection tool, and the R squared, so how predictive it is, with one being like where you want to be, lower than one being is like,
yeah, one would be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And theirs is like
zero would be utterly random.
And theirs is like 0.95. That's for really good. RFAs. For RFAs specifically, their model cleans up. Their predicted term on Natchez is 8 years. Their predicted cap hit is 879. So this would be like a, you know, you'd be valuing Natchez as like a core guy in a really meaningful way.
But, I mean, how much have we been talking about the need for a talent upgrade in the top six, right? And
for
to
sure.
Find somebody who's age matches up with Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and if you thought you could get him at a number long term, right, with the cap going up, now you'd have to, if it's a Hronek maybe plus whatever deal, you're giving up a lot, right? Because you already gave up a lot to get Hronek, and he's a premium position and all that. It opens up another hole. But I can understand the impulse to say, like, you know what, we need another guy who's really talented with the puck, who can play in our top six.
They desperately need that. I mean, I'm not knocking the concept, right? I do think it's worth being very circumspect about just exactly what type of player you're getting and what type of commitment it usually takes to get that player signed.
I think the reason they're connected right now is like, it's a similar conversation with Filip Hronek.
Right.
Do you value him? He's probably going to cost X. Do you value him as like a true core part of your team that you're building around for the next 8 years at that number? I think that's it's the same conversation with Natchez from Carolina's perspective, but also from the Canucks' perspective. Okay, we'll kick the Kotkaniemi side of this discussion into the next segment. But lots of reports in general about Elias Lindholm, about who might be interested in him.
The silly season has
arrived. The silly season is fully here. I'm loving it. It's fantastic. But we'll get into Kotkaniemi on the other side. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. More Canucks talk next here on Sportsnet 650.